Let me turn the time then over to Sandy Cherry. Let me just mention a little bit about Sandy. She worked for a number of years and did graduate studies with Kenneth Ring, who is one of the founders, if not the founder, of IAMS, of the International Association, back in, where was it you worked with?
University of Connecticut.
Right, University of Connecticut. And Ken has written a number of probably some of the best books on near-death experiences. But without further ado, let me turn the time over to Sandy, then, to introduce our presenters this evening.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. It's exciting to see all of you. Thank you for coming. Those of you, this is your first meeting, may I tell you that what you're going to hear tonight is going to be very interesting, because you're going to hear about, instead of just one person telling their near-death experience, you're going to hear book reviews of books that I know that you're going to want to get. But I hate to tell you this. Hold up your book. She went on the internet to see if she could get that book at Amazon.com. It is now $150. I think that's a mistake. She said, no, I went back and looked. I honestly think it's a mistake. But, and she said, they said one available. And I think I have three copies, but no, you may not have them. At $150, I'm going to sleep on them tonight. That's crazy. But I think Elaine Durham would like to know her book's worth. Martin, do you think Elaine might have a book or two she wants to sell? Anyway, what I decided, let me give you a little background. I got my master's degree at Brigham Young University. When I started my undergraduate work at the age of 45, which, in other words, I was getting my bachelor's degree, I was very intrigued by near-death experiences, and that's what led me to continue to do research. And then by the time I made a certificate accepted in graduate school, blew them away because I said, you know what, this is what I want to do my research in. And they go, well, no one around here even would probably be able to help you out. Well, I found that there were a lot of professors at the university who were willing to work with me on this subject. And so when I graduated in, 99, the age of 55, it was absolutely amazing to me that there was an IANS, first of all, in Utah, and it was as big as it was, and I started coming, and they asked me to be on the board. So my goal on the board is to inform you that research is still being done, and also to introduce you to those people who have written books. And so I was thrilled last month when I didn't come to the meeting, Dave asked our audience if three people would be willing to review books for us and then tell us the experience. And then afterwards, we're going to talk about some interesting facts about what do we learn from these experiences. Why are you here? Why are you here tonight? Every one of you has a different answer. Someone I know has just died. I just have been told by a doctor I have terminal illness. I have a child who commits suicide. I want to know what there is beyond this life. I'm curious. I've had a near-death experience and I want to know more about it. Every one of you, a different story and a different reason. One of the most popular reasons, my friend drugged me here. I don't know why I am here. That is the most popular reason. But other than that, the one who drugged you here has a different reason. So tonight, I hope that we can expand a little bit. I told her, I said, we've got to go look at Deseret Books and see if you can get I Stand All Days. And some of you brought your books. Would you hold up your books that are like the ones that you brought so that you can see? This is I Stand All Amazed. Oh, The Message is the other one we're going to review by, and there he's got Saved by the Light. You see, hold them so they can see him. Okay, and these are the three books we're going to be reviewing tonight. I'm so glad you brought them with you because you'll have some comments and things that you can share, and that's what we want to do. It's very rare for a book to be that expensive. So I know, first of all, I know you can get The Message. You can get it on Amazon.com for less than $20. And it's in paperback. And Saved by the Light, I'm sure you can too. But these are really written at different times, and I think that it will be really interesting. So let me introduce our speakers, and I'll tell you what they're going to review. First is my dear friend and neighbor, Elizabeth Allen. And she is going to be reviewing I Stand All Amazed by Elaine Durham. Elaine Durham, interesting enough, was on the board of directors when I joined IANS. She was a fantastic, and still is, I'm sure, a fantastic lady. It was so wonderful when she finally decided to write her book and it was published. Great insight, great story. So you will enjoy that. And Elizabeth will be first, and then after Elizabeth will be Pamela Larkin. Pamela is going to talk to us about Danion Brinkley's book, Saved by the Light. Now, what is so intriguing about this book was, or this man's experience, and I don't even know if you know this, Pamela, but Danyon had his near-death experience 1 year before Raymond Moody wrote his book. You know Raymond Moody? Does that ring a bell? Okay, Raymond Moody, the man who coined the phrase near-death experience and probably is the most well-known author of near-death experiences. Danyon Brinkley met up with Raymond Moody. You know that story about the aura? You don't know. But, I didn't want to take it from her. She's going to tell you. Well, all right, let me tell you that this is the most fascinating thing. In his near-death experience, he's shown some different... But one of the things he's shown is a newspaper heading in which the heading says, a man who is a cowboy with the initials RR has been elected president. Well, this was in 1975. And so he thought for sure Robert Redford was going to be the president. And he did. And so when he met Raymond Moody, he told Raymond Moody about it, and they sat together and came up with, it's got to be Robert Redford. Little did they know. But that one happened to come true. So Pamela will be talking on that. By the way, Saved by the Light is also a movie. If any of you can find it in the archives, I've got it at my house. Anyway, he's fantastic and a good movie. And maybe some night we'll show it on the big screen here. Okay, and last but not least is John. And John Gallagher is going to be talking to us about The Message, which was written by Lance Richardson. I read it about a month ago, and I was so excited about it, and I knew he lived in Idaho. So I tried to call up, and I got online, and I wanted to talk to Richard. He's really enjoying that experience, for real. And he has had his real death experience. He died 5 years after having his near-death experience. So I think it's such a treasure, though, that he left us this legacy in the form of a book. So with no further ado, I will let Elizabeth, and then when Elizabeth finishes, Pam, you take over, and then John.
So when Sandy asked me to review this, and I've read the other two already and love them, and I've read many, more than happy to do it. And she gave it to me Sunday, so it's recent that I read this book. It's very fresh in my mind. So I'll just start with missionaries coming to her door. And so she introduces her book with talking to some Mormon missionaries, and she tells them that she's had this near-death experience, so they're really interested, and they say, well, tell us about your experience. So then she reminisces about she calls it a death vision, which I like, because she was dead. And, you know, in some of the stories that you hear, people can't prove that they were actually dead, but she knows that she was dead. You know, she had a nurse that was prepping her for the morgue and, you know, taping her eyes shut and everything, and she was dead for a good hour before she came back. Anyway, so she reminisces just a little bit. She doesn't go real in-depth into her life, her early life. She talks about how mean her mother was, what a difficult challenge that was for her. And her father loved her very much, but ended up sexually abusing her just before she turned 11. So that ended up being another difficult situation in her life. So she just had a very difficult childhood and growing up years. And that led to just a lot of depression later in her life. She was very successful in business. She got married and had 3 daughters and thriving floral business. And when she actually had her near-death experience, she was attending 3-week class with her cousin for her floral business. Ended up having seizures, but she didn't even realize what was happening to her. Now her cousin said, "What's wrong, Elaine?" And she had blood on her mouth from biting her tongue, and she was having the seizure and didn't even realize what was happening, and ended up being transported to the hospital in the emergency room, where they assumed that it must have been a drug overdose just from the symptoms that they were seeing. They had no proof that it was. I think she had some cold medication, and so they just assumed that it must have been a drug overdose because of her cold medication, even though she hadn't taken any of it. So they were paddling her heart and, you know, shocking her, trying to get her back and working on her. And in that process, as they were doing that, she left and she experienced being in this really peaceful place in the river and seeing, you know, people that she knew, some of them her husband's family. When they shocked her heart, it just jolted her back into her body, and she was in all this excruciating pain. And as I continued to work on her, it was just going in, and I think she was actually above her body, and hearing what the doctors were saying and witnessing what was happening. And then finally, there was a car accident, and so the doctors just said, you know what, we can't waste any more time on her, she's gone, let's move on to this, you know, helping the people in this car accident. They just left her there, and she was kind of in a state of limbo, I believe, but it was like 20 minutes. There was a nurse, she did witness a nurse who was concerned. The doctor was, you know, kind of short with the nurse for, you know, being concerned, and she knew that this nurse was praying for her and was ordered to stay with her and get her ready for the morgue. So she was there on the gurney and being prepped for the morgue. And they had called, they didn't know what religion she was. She had never joined any church. The nurse was Catholic, and she was wearing, Elaine was wearing a necklace with a gold cross, so they thought, well, she must be Catholic. So they just called a priest to come. And when the priest came, he was saying the prayers, and that was when she popped out of her body, and you know, he was giving her the last rites. And she popped out of her body and went floating past his face and had a good look at the priest and could see him clearly. And then she went on to the experience, what she calls her death vision, because she was dead, and so she doesn't, you know, she does not call it a near-death experience because she was actually dead. So she talks about getting to the other side, and she was, oh, the first thing she saw was a group of people that were kind of in darkness, and then there was a light, and she knew, she could tell that these people didn't even see this, the light. And so she chose to go to the light, and but she did notice the people that were in the darkness that were just completely unaware that there even was light. So she leaves the world behind. One thing she did say, I'm going to back up just a little bit, she, even though she had such difficulties in her early life, she prayed a lot. And she sought repentance, and she really didn't feel like God was there for her before her death vision. But regardless of not feeling God in her life, she continued to pray and search and seek for God and search and seek for truthfulness, and did her best to, you know, be a good person. She met the Savior, you know, Jesus Christ, and she talks about having a life review. And one of the questions that I, you know, in the reading I've done, seems to be a common question, you know, what have you done for your fellow man? And that was the question that she was asked. Her life review was, the way she described it, was being able to see everything all at once. So she talks about the love of the Lord Jesus Christ. Yeah, I really wanted to share some quotes directly from her book to give you a feel for, you know, a feel for her words, because I think they're so powerful, and for me. So she says, there are no words to adequately describe this, but somehow I realized that I had actually become a part of Christ's light. With incredible tenderness, he made me part of his eternal presence, his eternal peace, and I felt a perfect joy such I have never known, either before or since. I knew that my Lord knew me beyond anything I could ever imagine, and yet despite what he knew of me, he loved me infinitely more than I could comprehend. She talks about being able to forgive herself, and she was, you know, shown things in a way that helped her to understand her own experiences and her own life, and to have compassion, not just for herself, but for her parents, for those who have, you know, been abusive to her. And she talks pretty extensively about forgiveness, which, you know, I find very helpful just in my own life, just to have a better understanding of that process of forgiveness. She was shown that her sins, you know, were not of her own making. You know, the things that happened to her with her father, she didn't choose. She talks a lot about love, how to love others, how to serve others. And she just filled with questions, has a lot of questions. One of the things that She talks about is the purpose of life. That's what she says about the purpose of life. Besides love, while I was one with Christ, I felt completely infused with all the secrets of God from the very beginning of time to endless infinity. This may not have been the case, but I felt at the time as though I understood the whole and complete purpose of life, not only on earth, but there in that realm as well. For instance, I knew that every single individual who has ever lived had been in training from the eternities, learning how to become like God. That I was given to understand means learning how to love unconditionally and learning to love just as it has been through the eternities, as accomplished through joyfully giving service to others. So she talks a lot about service and how important that is as part of learning to love one another. She talks about the fact that there are no races in heaven. She was taught about her role as a woman, the role of men and women. She talks about the worth of children and the nature of adversity. She's shown spiritual levels, and what she says about that is, I also understood that whatever level of spiritual enlightenment I might have achieved when I leave this world, I would enter into that same level in the next world, or world of spirits. In other words, I will go after death where my spirituality is most comfortable. In another place, she talks about three levels, how she was shown three different levels in heaven. She talks about the select of God and kind of explains what she was taught about that. She talks about spiritual gifts, the fact that all of us can go as high as we choose. You know, we choose where we go.
What about the select of God?
She talks about, okay, I'll just read this one paragraph because it's kind of interesting. To help me understand these individuals going to the different levels of heavenly glory, I saw what seemed like a great number of elevator shafts rising to various heights or levels. People chose which elevators to ride and were left at their desired level. Then they either remained there in contentment or, if they desired, continued to learn and grow until they felt ready to take another elevator to a higher level. Only one shaft went all the way to the top, and only a select few went to that highest level. There were not many willing to live their lives according to the higher laws or in the manner needed to go all the way to that highest level.
How long did that lady stay up in that area?
She doesn't talk about going to actual levels. She just talks about the fact that there were different levels, and she was shown...
how long was her life after death experience?
How long was she dead?
Yeah.
For an hour. So she talks about the perfect church. One of her questions was, you know, what church should I go to? You know, she was shown some, you know, she calls it an interesting vision. She was shown some very interesting things in relation to those questions. She was not told which is Christ's perfect church. She says, though I was not informed by the angel, she had an angel guiding her at this point, which church it was, he did tell me that Christ's heavenly church is on the earth again today, organized just like it was organized in days of old. He also told me that if I truly desired to find it, I would. So she talks about a new people, and so she was... Part of her quest when she came back was finding a new people that she could relate with and be with. She's shown some very other interesting things. She's shown two old friends. She learns about the death of babies. You know, she had a question about, you know, what happens to babies that die, the nature of suffering, you know, why do we suffer in this life? And she was, told that it helps us to grow and learn, and that the experiences and the learning that we can achieve in this life are greater than if we try to accomplish the same things on the other side. It takes longer and is more difficult. So she's taught about the importance of having a physical body, and she was shown three powerful spirits that when she came back. She actually ended up getting to meet all three of those spirits, and she was told that she would, even though one of them was a baby to be born without a brain. you know, over on the other side, when during her death vision, when she saw that spirit, she was just brilliant, full of just light. You know, so when she did get to see that child, that baby without the brain in this life, it took her a little bit, but she recognized that spirit when she met her. And she did die as a very young child. Okay, so she talks about ministering angels and divine protection, how that works, that we are all given that protection, but it's by our choices that allows that protection to be with us or not. Along with the protection, there's, she saw like, you know, two, she kind of described them as gargoyle type dark entities that were also there wanting to pester her, cause trouble, and dissuade her from the light, from goodness and my choices. She talks about her choice to return. And then she talks about the pain of returning, just the physical pain itself. And then coming back and having everybody just think she was crazy. You know, she was so excited and wanted to share all of these experiences with people. And they were like, you know, one nurse finally told her, if you don't watch out, you were going to be up on the crazy ward with all the crazy people. And she thought, well, how many people are there like me? You know, so anyway. And she just can't make herself be quiet. She's just so eager and so full of questions. And right, she can't remember everything, you know, right at first. She remembered, you know, a lot of her experience. You know, I think part of being in this physical body makes it hard to completely have the understanding here that is possible on the other side. So the doctors are basically telling her that she's hallucinating and crazy, and so finally she kind of just decides that, you know, she tries to be more quiet and more selective about who she talks to. And coming back, she talks about how it was a gradual process coming back, gradually remembering. She had a brain tumor, that was actually what was her seizures, so she kind of started finding out later, actually changed her hospital records, because they were afraid of being sued in the hospital. And so they didn't want to say that she had died, but the neurologist had done a report, and in his report, the full report was there that she really had died. And so when she started finding out, you know, the medical things that she'd actually gone through, you know, the jewels, the electricity that had gone through her heart, because for months after her experience, her ribs hurt and her chest hurt, and she was like, why am I in so much pain? And so, you know, finally she started getting some of those answers that, you know, helped her to make more sense. And she was eager to see the priest who had given her last rites. You know, she could remember what he looked like, and so, you know, she was in a room with the roommate, and every day a priest would come in to share communion with her. So she just kept looking, and every day she was looking to find, she called him her priest. And finally he came. You know, when he came, she said, you know, excuse me. And so he stopped and talked to her, and he was amazed. He said, you were dead. You know, he knew that she was dead. He was there with the nurse when she was, I guess they go through a process of, you know, taking their earrings, and, you know, he was taping her eyes and all of that when, you know, she was dead. And, you know, he knew that she was dead because he saw her when she was dead. Anyway, so she, you know, it meant a lot to her to be able to talk to him, for him to say, yeah, I was there, I know you were dead. I mean, and he was just amazed to see her alive. So just to wrap it up real quick, I am just about done. Anyway, she ended up divorced, lost a lot, but then gained a lot. I mean, her values completely shifted from wanting money and, you know, being in with the right crowd to serving others. And anyway, I loved her book. It's very good.
My name is Pamela Larkin, and about 13 years ago, my mom was dying, and I went to the bookstore, and I asked God to give me a book. And Dan Brinkley was the one book that I was really drawn to, and I truly loved this book because he was such a scoundrel, and he was such a totally opposite person that you would think would go straight to hell. And it really showed me unconditional love of God when I finished reading the book. My mom was a very religious person. At the end of her life, she was so afraid to die because she felt like she hadn't done everything that she should have done. And she just had the fear of death. And this book really helped me help her cross over with peace in her heart. Dan Brinkley was on the phone one day. He was talking to a friend. There was a storm that came up, and the lightning was extreme lightning in the storm. And he was telling his friend that he needed to get off the phone because his mom was calling and says, you should never be on the phone when there's a lightning storm. So his friend was saying, oh, do you always do what your mom tells you to do? And as soon as he said that, he felt this excruciating pain go right through his ear and through his body. And the lightning had hit the transformer and went through the telephone wire and electrocuted him. His wife, her name was Sandy, that came in and seen him on the floor, and he had been electrocuted. And he said that seeing her come over and start giving him CPR, and then his a friend came over and was helping her with him, and they called the ambulance. And he says he could view them crying over his body, and he could see him working on his body that was so burnt from the inside. And he said that all of a sudden he went into this tunnel, and he said there was incredible peace in this tunnel. And he seen a light, and he went towards the light. And he said all of a sudden there were some light beings that came to him. And these light beings were as if they were glitter. He says they were so beautiful. And he said he felt such an incredible peace and incredible love from these beings. He went with them, and then he reviewed his life. To me, in the book, the review was the most wonderful thing that I experienced. As I read it, it was like I was right there with him. And as he reviewed his life, there was one instance in the book where, I mean, he was worked for the special services, and he was an assassin for the government. And in this one review, he took a man's life. He shot a Viet Cong general. And he said as he pulled the trigger, he said all of a sudden he became the bullet. And the bullet entered the man's head. And he said he could feel the pain that he caused the man. And he could feel the bullet exploding inside of his body. And he says, and then all of a sudden, the people that were around him, he experienced their shock, their pain, and he felt everything that they felt. Went and he felt the pain that his mother felt, and his father felt, and his children. Everything that was associated with that man, he felt. And he said it was such pain that he felt reviewing this act. And as he looked at the beings that were watching this with him, one incredible thing that happened, not one of them judged him. Not one. He said he felt such incredible, unconditional love from these beings. And he went and reviewed a lot of mean things that he did to people, and a lot of good things that he did. In one instance in there, he was saying that he kicked the dog one time, and he actually felt what this dog felt and how sad this dog and this animal felt because of this action and how much his dog had loved him. As I was listening to him review his life, it's funny because we don't have to die to review our own lives. I read from him, he was saying every day he goes into a review of his life to see exactly what pain he's caused people and what joy he's caused people. And it gave him more compassion by reviewing his life. He learned compassion. He wasn't judged for what he did, but he learned compassion through it. He learned that all these people around him, where he was at, loved him regardless of what he did. He judged himself. And he learned through the experience compassion for others. He learned not to judge others because they could have easily judged him, but they didn't. And when you think about the things that he had done, because he was a truly mean man, not one of them sent him to hell. He talked about the incredible peace that he felt in this place that he was in. It helped me with my mother, because my mother was put so many judgments on herself. And she lived an incredible Christian life. I mean, she was just incredible. But she felt that she hadn't done enough. She was always in judgment of not doing enough. Even as myself, when I read this, I always felt an extreme lacking of love in my life. And as I read this, he was talking about the incredible love that you have to feel for yourself to be able to forgive yourself of things that you didn't think that was so good. And no one else judged him but himself, and he had to forgive himself to become a whole person again. And when he came back, he ran all over the place, and he was trying to make amends, and he was really humorous because he wanted to make amends for what he felt. But the thing about it, he would have never evolved that height of his own awareness if he wouldn't have experienced the complete opposite of what he was. And he learned compassion through it. And even when he came back, they had pronounced him dead. And he was in the hallway, and he had a sheet over him. And his best friend was sitting by him, and he could hear him crying. And he entered his body, and he said it was racked with pain. And he says he didn't know if he could really stay in it. His friend looked at the sheet, and he seen the only way he could move, because his whole body was just burned. The only way he could let them know that he was alive was breathe on the sheet. And so his friend was looking at it, and he seen the sheet go up and down. Because he was breathing on the sheet, his friend noticed that he was alive. They started working on him, and he had an incredible experience of coming back to where he could walk even again. He was talking about how he would have them get, because he couldn't move any parts of his body. He was so burnt from the inside. And he would have them get books on the anatomy, and he would look at them, and he would move one finger at a time. And he said it would be so painful, but he'd move it till he could move it really good. Within his mind, he was telling his mind to do parts of his body to where he ended up walking out of the... Since then, he has had another near-death experience. But this time he was just really ready to go. And he went into the hospital. He was all blue. The doctor came in, and his aorta, he had an infection when he cut his hand. He had an aorta that was being chewed away. And the doctor told him he had to have an operation where he had it replaced with an artificial valve. And he said, no way. He said, I'm not going to stay here. I'm gone. I know what it's like. And, hey, you know, I'm out of here. And I think that's the way all of us should be. We can't truly live our lives if we fear death. If we fear that I haven't done enough. I haven't been the person that I should. I tend to judge other people. We have to take inventory of our own selves and know that we're here to experience life. We're here to experience it and be able to find who we really are within. And I really found that out when my mother was dying. it was like you come into this world by yourself and you leave by yourself. There is no one there to tell you what to do anymore. There is a part of all of us that we should keep her within ourselves, because we have to know who we are and what we are and why we came here. And when we leave and we review our lives, there is nobody there to judge us. There's nobody there to tell us what to do. We have to answer for ourselves. I looked at my mom. All these years, she gave her God power to someone else. And she was so alone and didn't know what to do, because she always had other people tell her what was right and what was wrong. And all of a sudden, she was faced with having to answer for herself. And she did cross over peacefully. And I thank God for these books, because it really helped me tell her, don't judge yourself, Mom. Go and know that you are a child of God, and that you have done everything in your life, whether it was good or bad, it was still an experience. And God or no one else up there is going to judge you. This book was just incredible to me. It just really helped me with my own spirituality. It gave me power of my own spirituality to say, okay, I have got to find the peace and the love within myself. And I know he came back with a lot of psychic powers. He was able to see the future, and he also seen a lot of the things that have happened into our world. He said they were like videos, like we have now. He viewed the communist wall coming down. He viewed Russia or communism, the fall of communism. He viewed things that I think that haven't even happened yet. As far as America, how America would undergo a lot of changes that we're seeing right now today. But I think the most point is, as I read through the book, he talks about unconditional love. How no matter who you are, there is no great or small on the other side. There is no big I's and little U's on the other side. That we are all one, and that we all, there was such an incredible love. And that's what we have to bring on earth. We have to remove the borders, and we have to love everyone, because there are no we's and they's. We're all just one human family. And the incredible unconditional love he felt is what saved him. That is what saved him, because he could have probably just, everyone would have been critical and judgmental, and there was no love while he was reviewing his life, that would have, his spirit would have been totally broken. But because of the love that they showed him, it restored him to where he was able to come back. And he was able to show other people, don't judge others, but love them, because that is what saves them. That is what brings them towards who they really are. And that, to me, the book was just incredible. And that is basically what this is all about. There is nothing but love left when you die. There is nothing but memories left when you die. And the book showed me that, and it really brought me a personal relationship with God that I have never, ever known. That religion or anything else could have ever taught me or fulfilled within me, that I am a child of God, and that you are a child of God. And through this whole earth, through this whole experience, what we came down here in the flesh to learn is that we have to love each other, because that is what is going to save the human race. And I just enjoyed the book.
I got to read this the message, and first of all, I found and paid $8 for this book. There's a radio station on 5th West and 36th South, KDYL, that has them on sale for $8. And I'd like to address this question up here about time. Time is completely different. They are, for most of the books I've read, time exists here on Earth, and in the spirit world, it's irrelevant or not even present. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because so many of these stories and books have common threads throughout, all of them. The thought processes we have raise to an elevation of our vibration that our thoughts aren't one plus one, it's not a linear thing. It's we can ask thousands of questions at a time and instantaneously get those answers. Perfect clarity. So it's truly the higher vibration that this spirit world operates. Getting to Lance's book, I read it a few years ago, and then I've been reviewing it briefly. I didn't know I'd be up here for 15 minutes, so.
And that's what you can do. Go ahead.
I'm not as prepared. But this is a fantastic book, and first of all, it's just very well written. It's written, seems like, with tremendous love. The first few chapters, one of the most moving points for me was when he was in the hospital with a coma after the motorcycle accident. He had a very painful lung problems, and then they lived on a budget, so he had several young sons, and they bought a motorcycle, and then on Christmas Day, they got it running, and they just drove it down the street and turned around and came back, and that's after the motorcycle accident, he slipped into a coma, pretty deep coma. And, one of the most moving parts is with his sons, and it's just beautiful. Well, I'll move on, but I don't want to ruin the story for you. On the other side, he got to meet Elohim. Throughout the book, there's a lot of things that they talk about. One of the things is talking about levels and progression. And he talks about the power of prayer, that when we pray, that God will allow people that are the most sufficient and qualified to answer those prayers. And usually, he talks about these are done through family members that have, and then how he was amazed. He got to witness some of the events in his life where his father was being influenced by angels. And then when he came back, he was able to share that experience with his father. Hey, his father was actually a senator. He lived up in Idaho. He's written quite a few books, but this is the only one I've read. He talks about, ultimately, that we're all just one big family. He talks about the importance of genealogy and the importance of family and staying together. He talks about the spirit world and that there's nobody really standing around. There's no real reason to or no desire to just stand around, that everybody's usually chooses to keep busy in service and helping other people, and that there's a balance. That he also was surprised that they have golf, as he explained. He says there's a balance in life that is spent in a variety of endeavors, including diversions such as golf. Yes, golf in heaven. You wouldn't believe the course that they have here. A lot of creativity would go into these golf courses and other activities, I'm sure. He also stresses that everything is the way it's supposed to be. Our progression and for us to overcome these stumbling blocks. He talks about the greatest gift that we have is our agency that God gives us. Again, it's very well written and very beautiful. I remember the part where he's in a coma. I drove a semi-truck, and I was up in Bountiful at a store delivering it. And I just, you know, tears came to my eyes when I'm reading about his family being in a coma. It's just a beautiful, well-written book. And of course, the subject matter is fantastic. I'm not sure how deep you want to get into this, but my interest in near-death experiences have changed over the years. I've been reading, I got to read Betty Eady's book about 15 years ago, and how beautiful that is, and Scott Peck's book, and Daniel Brinkley's, and getting so many visions of what the spirit world and other things are like. He also got to experience a life review, that we all get to experience that. Can be very beautiful. And this is the part I wasn't sure if you wanted to get into. He talks about our nation, the purpose of bringing the destruction of our nation. Some of these books get into prophecy, possible prophecies. most of the books stress, will spend several pages stressing that this is the way it could happen. He does get into some parts of that our nation would be brought down to bring into line a world dictatorship. He also talks about truth, and truth is eternal. And one of the things that's stressed, I can't remember exactly where he talks about it, but these stumbling blocks, and with every thing that happens to us are the opportunities to either positive or negative. We can completely, the free agency and the choice we have. That's about it. Thank you.
I'd like to have you be able to ask some questions, but before you do, one of the things I wanted to point out to you is, first of all, in both the message and, in fact, in all three of these books, there are some prophetic things that are said about not only our nation, about the future, and especially I love Daniel Brinkley's because his were things that you could actually chart them, and not all of them have come to pass, some of them haven't. One of the most incredible things about the message I want to mention to you is he talks about the need for us to return to looking at what our forefathers intended for this nation. And he really stresses that, that if we want to hold on to the gift that we have in this wonderful country, that it's so important for us to look back and see why it was founded, on what principles it was founded, and to return to those. And he was shown some books specifically for him to read. And you can go on RichLanceRichardson.com, and you can see the books that he was told to, specifically to read. It tells you right on there which ones they were about our country. But what I wanted to do was, I wanted you to think about this. What did you hear within these three books, their experiences? What did you hear that were common elements? Does anyone have a thought? Yes. They all felt a lot of pain when they went back into their body. Okay, I'm repeating it so everyone can hear. Yes. They all talked about love. All of them, didn't they? And that was the most profound part of that. Anything else?
To serve one another, not to be judgmental.
We basically are our own children.
Yes.
If you ever feel like being mean to somebody, remember the life that you've had.
Oh, I like that. If you ever think about beating someone, remember that the life review is coming. Good comment. Very true. Anyone else? Another common element that you heard in all of these experiences? Yes.
We are all one.
That we are all one. That no matter what, we're connected. If you don't like me, it's going to affect me. If you love me, I'm going to sit on your lap.
I would say be grateful instead of saying, oh, I've had this life review, and you feel down and hopeless. It doesn't exist. It's given me a sense of, hey, I'm grateful that I've seen this, but now's my wonderful opportunity. I still have time to be
time. Yes, this is true.
Positively.
Absolutely. I think all three of these book reviews would tell us that ultimately the gift we're given is we are here. And we still have time, and we still have the opportunity to change, or to give, or to love. Yes, Carol.
There is more than this world and this life. There is something beyond.
There is more than this world and this life. There is something beyond. Okay.
It's what's intriguing from a scientific viewpoint. Normally, if you're dead for 5 minutes, you start to deteriorate your brain activity.
Right.
Some people have been dead for hours, and they come back with new gifts. You know, totally changed it, and that makes it go, wait a minute, this is not normal.
That look at these people, they are dead more than even 5 minutes. By the way, isn't it interesting? Clinically, all of these people, by the way, if you were to look at the records, you could see that all, not these people sitting here, but the ones they were talking about were considered to be dead medically. And like he said, science should stand up and take notice and say, wait a minute, what's going on here? It's really something we should take notice of. Yes, sir?
It seemed like the girls, they're all given dreams, but it seems like this last one was given a different dream about more things in the future that pertain just to us.
I like that. That's what I'm going to address tonight.
Because the other two seem to be something up there.
Right.
But his seemed to be something
about
here.
About our lives. So these three people, the first two book reviews, didn't talk about our life here as much as the third, the message, seems to address what's going on in our lives more today. And yet if you read each one of these, I agree. I think you would find that in all of them. You had a comment?
Yeah, one thing that I've noticed too is even in Betty J. Eady's book, when the heavens were rolled back and there was this drunk man on the curve, you could see the light in these people, and basically your light is your soul. This was a highly developed drunk. He was extremely, his light was so bright. And she looked, and this guy came by. He was extremely well educated. He had a three-piece suit on, and he was a very successful man. And he walked by this drunk man, and he realized he went to school with him. And right then and there, he had compassion for this man. And that drunk came down here and went through the life he did to teach that man compassion. When you really look at it, the people that we judge on the street that have nothing, those could be bright spirits trying to teach us how to give and have compassion and know that they are a part of us just as much as somebody that has a lot. And I think we need to look at our negative experience in this life are just as important as the positive ones. It's just like a battery. A battery doesn't work without the negative charge.
Good point.
Our soul, or this whole universe, doesn't work without the negative charge. We have to have the negative and the positive, and everything work. And I think that is the thing that we have to learn in a flesh form, is that we need to stop looking at the people that are well-educated and such good leaders. Because the people that are on the street that have nothing are really the leaders. They are the ones that are teaching us unconditional love.
That's a good point. And any other comments about okay. Elton, you had a comment?
I've had an opportunity to think a lot about these things too. And one thing this is just one thing, there are many, many things, and I could probably just talk with all of you for hours.
Yeah, and there's a lot of hands.
And a lot of hands. But I guess let me make this one quick point. You've heard over and over from various sources that it's important, that life on Earth is important. And you can learn faster here than on the other side. Why? On the other side, there's love. Love everywhere. Everybody loves everybody. Loving each other is easy. When you come to Earth, we have all these divisions. We group each other into different groups, and every group dislikes every other group. We're divided politically, socially, economically, religiously. Learning to love on Earth is a challenge. And if you can meet that challenge, if you can succeed in loving people who are different from you, you progress.
Okay. Let me just kind of pull us back in, because there is a point. And so what I'd like is, if you have a question, I'll get to you in just a minute. Here's what I'd like you to do is, I'd like to explain to you that Kenneth Ring put together some things that were really fascinating. And as you listen to these three experiences, you will probably hear some of these things. What is the most fascinating thing about the near-death experience to me is how it changes the life of the individuals who have had the near-death experience. But what is so profound to me, even more so, is the fact that lives like yours and mine, who have not especially had a near-death experience, but how we are affected by hearing about a near-death experience powerfully. In fact, when I did my thesis at BYU, that was what it was on. Was I tried to show the correlation between students who were exposed to near-death experiences and the fact that they changed. Well, let me tell you about the changes. These were from Kenneth Ring. The most common changes that a person who's had a near-death experience will have is they will have, and these are some of the things you're talking about and want to express, is a great appreciation for life was number one. Number two is self-acceptance. Which is exactly what they talked about, loving yourself, accepting who you are, accepting your limitations, accepting your gifts, even accepting your failings and your faults. Very incredible. The other one was concern for others. We hear the term service. just very common. We find this in people who have had near-death experiences over and over. A loss of materialism and a loss of concern for impressing others. People become comfortable with who they are and present themselves as they are. Another one is concern for social and planetary issues. The majority of people coming back from a near-death experience seem to have a common element here too. The other one is, interesting, a quest for meaning. I think you addressed a purpose for life, in, you know, what is our, my purpose in life. One of the things that's so common is what is my purpose in life. The other thing that most people, this is going to rub you wrong, some of you. Many people, majority of people after a near-death experience are less religious, but more spiritual. Pretty profound. That doesn't mean they stop going to church, whatever church they go to, but religion isn't, doesn't have the same place. Their spirituality, their prayers, their concern for others is at a higher, deeper level and means more to them than the dogmatic or the doctrine of religion. Those become less important to them. So spirituality, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about. If you listen to each one of these near-death experiences, you would find that the one that Elizabeth presented, which was Elaine's experience, Elaine was never really one who joined religion, right? The other one was Danian. Danian's parents were very religious. I believe they were. He was raised in a maybe evangelical. I can't remember if it was Pentecostal evangelical, but I know that I remember him saying that either it's. Or Pentecostal, Southern Baptist, one of them. Was it Southern Baptist? I think it was. Okay, but he never embraced it. So he never was seeking spiritual answers. Now the next one, the message, is very profoundly LDS. This man lives very LDS. He knew he probably wouldn't live to be very old because he had, is it Crohn's disease? I can't remember. It's Crohn's disease. But he knew he wouldn't live very long. And he was very, very religious. Also very spiritual. Interesting. Elaine was seeking a religion. Danian wasn't seeking anything. Danian is blown away. By the way, Danian never embraces a religion in his life. He becomes very spiritual, but never embraces a religion. By the way, Elaine, when those missionaries knocked at her door, they were able to answer the questions that she was told to ask, like, is there such thing as a priesthood in this religion, da, 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 da. These three questions, and this was the only religion she happened to find, which happened to be LDS, that answered those three questions. So she was seeking, and she asked, and she was shown. Danian didn't ask. He didn't say, oh, is there a religion, or, you know, anything like that. That was not his goal. In the message, which is really interesting, this man already was profoundly, deeply involved in his religious faith. What's your experience going to be like? What is it you are seeking? Because that's what you go with. Why do you think that every one of these experiencers wasn't told the same thing? Different belief. They weren't needed. So the incredible thing about each one of these profound experiences is that they received what they were ready for. What they were able to process, what they were able to understand, how much they had grown on this earth in many ways, prepared them, if you read their book and understand their background, prepared them for the message that they received when and where they went. Pretty incredible, isn't it? You know, free agency is an incredible gift. And when you think about it in terms of even crossing over to the other side, that you take with you what you understand and what you long for, you then are exposed to. Is that pretty? I think that's incredible. I will never forget. Does anyone remember Thule? Is that his name? Remember? Okay, do you remember what he said? He was walking along with this guy. He had a near-death experience. This guy fell 30 feet off of some kind of raft thing onto concrete, broke almost every bone in his body, and he died. He has this near-death experience, and his guide is taking him along, and I won't even tell you, the guide is a character in itself. a guy that they thought had tried to commit suicide, but he was just trying to stretch his neck and accidentally died by hanging himself. But he really wanted all of his family to know that he didn't. So that's his guy, his best friend who killed himself by stretching and died. Okay, so never know who's going to be your guy, but it was true. I mean, his family was devastated, and he truly did not mean to die. So they were all thrilled to find out that. Anyway, Tuli is going along, walking along, or whatever you do, float along in this place, which I'm looking forward to floating. Anyway, he's going along, and what does he find? Yes, this woman is outside. I don't remember that he knew who she was, but she is in the garden, and her house is just darling. I can imagine it. I mean, he didn't describe it, but I can imagine it. You know, a little white picket fence and, you know, shutters on the, and just darling. And she has her sun hat on, and she is out there, and she is gardening, and she is loving it. You can just see her. And Julie looks at the guy and said, well, what's this all about? You know, what? How come she has this darling little house and everything's so beautiful and perfect? And he said, well, that's what the desires of her heart were. Whoa. Is that what you desire? Do you love gardening? Be careful. You might garden for a long time. Is that profound? I mean, is that not profound? The desires of your heart. And so, why I asked for these specific books was because I wanted to make a point that each of them were seeking different places, different things, different spiritual growth, different awareness. They each went with different problems. Look at Elaine. Elaine, her life, what it had been like was horrible. She needed to know that she was forgiven. She needed to know that she really didn't choose the horrible things that had happened to her, and she wasn't responsible for them. Now, then we look at Daniel, who needed to know he was horrible. And he got a fresh glimpse at it. He was the victimizer. He truly was. Yes. And Daniel was. There's one point in Daniel's book about the dog. I got to tell, this is a bit, little different than what she told you. But this was incredible. This was one of the good things Daniel did. He's driving down the street in his pickup truck, and what happens is he comes upon a man who has his dog chained to a tree, and he starts to beat the dog. And Damien gets really angry, I mean so angry, that he drives the pickup truck onto the guy's lawn, gets out of his truck, do you remember this? And he grabs the guy and he whacks him, when I mean punches him like the daylights. And this is in his life review. And as he punches the guy, he tells the guy is scared to death because Damien has a reputation, he's a killer. I mean, you know, he kills very easily. And the guy is scared to death, and he tells him, you ever touch that dog, you ever hurt that dog again, I'll come back and kill you. What he experiences that's so profound is he experiences the gratitude of the dog. The dog is fully filled with gratitude to Daniel Brinkley. One of the good things he did. But can you see where Daniel was? Daniel, by the way, I wish he could be here. We could talk to him and he could tell you. It's just incredible how this changed his life. Let me tell you another element of this thing that sounds so incredible. What percentage of the people who have near-death experiences do you think end up divorced? 80%. Do you know why? Why do you think that they would end up divorced? I need a hand. Yes, I'm a teacher. I need hands. Yes.
Usually the spouse can't handle the changes.
Yes, the spouse can't handle the changes. You're changed inside out. Daniel Brinkley was burned from the inside out. He comes back full of religion and he's telling his wife, you know, Jesus loves you. And she's like, Daniel, why don't you just go back to sleep? You know, I mean, it's so hard. You cannot understand that all of a sudden nothing matters except being able to share the love you have had. And by the way, when I did my research, if you were Muslim, if you were Buddhist, if you were Native American Indian, your near-death experience would reflect what you learned and believed. The likelihood is you would not meet Jesus. Because what you already have learned here, you take with you. Very powerful if you think about it. So, spirituality and the issue of whether or not you're seeking is so important. And the closer you get to that end, I think the message is, you know, clarify your questions. Know what you want to know. Look at the desires of your heart. Oh, you have a question, yes? I love what he's saying. He's saying that when Saul, he's saying an example of change, which is beautiful, is Saul, when he saw that light, that incredible light that changed him, and he changed his name to become Paul. And the scriptures, beautiful story, great example. Research indicates that near-death experiences have been recorded as far back as Plato. Unbelievable. I did one of my papers while I was at BYU was tracing back the research. And Socrates even talks about one of his soldiers who has a near-death experience. And they're recorded in 400, the monks recorded other monks who had died and then came back to tell about the hell they had seen and the beauty of heaven they'd seen. So really profound. I will give you, how about you guys be able to ask questions of me and our panel and anything else that's of interest to you, okay? I stand all amazed. Elaine Durham. The other one is Saved by the Light by Danyon Brinkley. He's the one that gets burned inside out. And The Message by Lance Richardson. All three, excellent. And really great because they contrast, they come from a different point of view in a different place. Yes, the website, LanceRichardson.com. And you'll see the other books he's written. He wrote about another book, a couple of other books that are really quite profound. And even LDS, slant on them for those of you that are LDS and would like to read them. And a CD. This gentleman right here, you had a question earlier.
My understanding was Dan Brinkley was the one I was familiar with. And my question concerned what these particular authors did after they came back, that their priorities changed. And I believe David Brinkley spent most of his time with hospice for the last 20 years.
Right. Good question.
And he also has got the centers.
Right. He has
for relaxation.
Kind of like therapy centers for people to go to, Dan and Brinkley. Now, Elaine Durham, Elaine has worked with hospice, but most of Elaine's life, since we've all known Elaine, has been spent doing home elderly care. So she actually will live in the homes of elderly people and take care of them, and that has been the majority of her time. Then a few years, I think it's been 5 years ago, her ex-husband was dying of cancer. She returned to Indiana to take care of him until his death. Her daughter then contracted cancer, and she stayed with her and helped her. Her daughter did survive. And right now, we understand Elaine's moving back here to our area, so we might be able to meet her and see her again. Now, Lance Richardson, 5 years, or 5 years after his near-death experience, Lance died. But during that period of time, he tried to read all the books, which was really interesting, and to write about his experience, and even further, that's why I say go online and look at what else he wrote, because he lists the books to read, and the books that he lists are definitely about our founding fathers and about our nation, which he was specifically told to read. Afterwards, people can come up and look at that. Does that sound good? Any other questions? Oh, yes.
Did any of the authors address the issue of suicide?
Yes, Elaine did. And she talks about two types of suicide, actually.
So
basically, the one is where you're not in your right mind and you're not really that aware of the bad choice that you're making. The other type of suicide is where you're angry and want to hurt somebody and you're vindictive. It's a lot harder for people who commit suicide in that frame of mind than if it's, you know, they're just kind of mentally ill or whatever, or just very depressed or something like that.
May I say that there's another book by Brown. Dave, do you know? I'm pretty sure her name is Brown, and it's a near-death experience, a book about her near-death experience. She wanted to die, and she has a near-death experience, and it really addresses some of the most profound things about near-death experience, I mean, about suicide. One of them being that one of the hardest things for that person who commits suicide to get over when they're on the other side is the pain that they've caused those they've left. And in fact, I believe it was George Ritchie said something to the effect. George Ritchie is the one who's the author of Return from Tomorrow, who just passed away this last year. He made the comment something to the effect of, if the family can let go of the pain, then it reduces the pain of that person on the other side tremendously.
That book was Heavenly Answers to Earthly Questions.
Okay, Heavenly Answers to Earthly Questions. Yes, Carol.
It was Joyce Brown.
Joyce Brown. Joyce Brown. So maybe if you want an author, you look for Joyce Brown's book, really good about suicide and addressing it. Very hopeful and very positive that there is a special place and learning is going on and they are at peace. But the only problem is how they suffer when they know that we still suffer because we love them dearly.
Scott Peck, he wrote The Road Less Traveled. He also wrote a book about near-death experience called On Heaven, or In Heaven as on Earth. Addresses it. It's fantastic.
Oh, really? In Heaven as on Earth.
Yes.
That is a novel.
Yeah, it's not about an actual near-death experience. Yeah. But still worth, Scott Peck is so good. Well worth reading, I'm sure. Any other questions that you might have?
One book that impressed me personally, and I'd like to just suggest it to any of you who want to perhaps go beyond the MBD. It was a very impressive book to me. I have suggested it to other people, and some of them have had a hard time reading it, but I'll give it to you anyway. It's up to you. The name of the book is Journey of Souls, and the author is Michael Newton, PhD.
I just finished reading, and I've got it out in the car, a fantastic book called There Is No Death. And in it, she addresses...
Who's the author?
Oh. Sarah Monet. You've read it. Isn't it fantastic?
Who's the author?
Sarah
Monet?
Sarah Linnell Monet.
It's fantastic. It addresses so many things. It does go into future prophecies also. But some of the beauty of it, it talks about what we can achieve. She is in the spirit world, and she's taken to see people and their homes. And she says, well, this is what these people have earned. And you can have whatever home you want, whether it's a mansion or a small cottage, based on what you have earned, or up to this certain level. There is no death.
23 minutes in hell. Yeah. Bill Weiss?
No, Howard Storm would like that book.
Oh, yeah. He spent more than 23 minutes, I think. Okay, last... Oh, yeah. I was going to address the issue of time, but the young man that asked that question.
It's just a comment. Not just near-death experiences where we can learn these truths. You know, whether it's religious teachers like Buddha and Jesus, or modern-day psychics like Sylvia Brown. You know, her point of view is, before we come to this life, we chart our life here, that we choose everything. We choose our parents. We choose our handicaps.
I do believe that.
Her version, she calls it a chart. We chart our lives. And she says, the more difficult the chart, the more advanced the spirit that wrote it.
This man made the comment that the more difficult the life you choose, the more advanced the spirit. Might I tell you that in the near-death experiences throughout the books, and I think I was looking at my library books today, and I'm going, oh my gosh, I long them out and then they don't come back, though. But I'm frustrated by that. But that issue has been addressed in so many unbelievable near-death experiences and cross-cultural, cross-religions. Unbelievable that again and again, do you think you chose where you are? Do you think you chose your limitations? And you're shaking your head no?
In that book, the girl said that she did not choose to be molested by her father.
No, well, but she knew. She talks about the fact that she knew a lot of the challenges. In fact, her guide that was helping her at that point said, are you sure you want to do all this stuff? And she's like, yes, I do.
Interesting. And I used to feel like, why would I have chosen this? Was I stupid? Was I, dreaming? Or was it, why wouldn't I have wanted to be, Gandhi or Mother Teresa or at least the child of, I wouldn't want to be Donald Trump's child. But, I'm just saying that we do. We say to ourselves, but once you accept who you are and where you are, there's Lessons from the Light by Kenneth Ring is probably one of the best near-death experience books you will ever read. And this is written by a man of science as well as probably one of the foremost authorities of near-death studies in the world. So, the Lessons from the Light by Kenneth Ring. Now, just before you go, we're going to let you go, but Eldon has something he wants to read.